Everything you know about health is about to change. Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Sometimes people suffer not from lack of faith, but from lack of knowledge. This is the show that changes that. If you are tired of being sick, tired of not getting answers, tired of spinning in circles, then listen closely to the next 30 minutes. For healing is not a mystery. It is a miracle that you were designed to experience. It takes hard work and real knowledge. It takes patience and time. It takes the education this show can provide. So, get it straight today. Here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. Welcome to the show. Today, the biochemistry of happiness, the myths and the realities. Happiness is always on your mind. It's why you came here. To be happy is God's divine plan. And yet, too many of us don't get there. Why? Well, modern technology, modern science talks to us about the biochemistry of it. I want to get into that today. But I want to focus on, well, perhaps where some of the myth of that lies. And I think some of the mistakes are made to reduce us to our biochemistry, I think, is misleading. And I think it often leads to nowhere. I have lots of great pictures today. Please get on the website if you can, straighttalk.cc. That's with two T's, .cc, not .com. Here we go. I want you to know four neurotransmitters. So the brain produces chemicals. Those chemicals are secreted. They cross brain cells at the synapse, and they transmit what your brain interprets as the feelings you have. One is called serotonin. We all know that because of Prozac, which is a SSRI uptake inhibitor. And the big news, of course, about serotonin is that serotonin is the chemical that makes us feel happy and relaxed and secure. It's that feeling after you eat a good meal, partly with carbohydrates, makes you want to kick back like you had a glass of wine, and just smile, as opposed to something called oxytocin. Oxytocin is another one of God's happy chemicals. Oxytocin has more to do with the feeling and the need to feel secure in relationship, which, of course, is going to intersect with serotonin. You got to remember now, one of the great myths, and of course, my shows are often about exposing myths. One of the great myths about neurotransmitters, whether it are the opiates like GABA, or whether it's serotonin, whether it's the endorphins, whether it's dopamine, whether it's oxytocin, one of the myths is that they're operating independently of each other. No. All these neurotransmitters I'm going to mention today and all the hormones that are connected to the neurotransmitters are all in one great orchestration, communicating with each other on levels that I suspect we will never understand. This is why the minute you apply a biochemical perspective, well, you're kind of lost. But that's what we do because that's where we're at. Human consciousness, especially in the hallmarks of science, has only evolved itself to a biochemical understanding. If we can see it, it exists. If we sense it, but we can't see it, it doesn't exist. This is a fundamental flaw. And of course, this has ramifications. For instance, serotonin, the happy chemical, if you don't have ample amounts of it being produced, you get depressed. Well, we figured out that if we invented Prozac, what we do then is allow the effects of it to last longer. I won't get into the details. And of course, we birthed Prozac. And of course, we've birthed an entire portfolio of drugs like these, and then, of course, all the opiates like Klonopin, Xanax, the whole slew. And that's just the beginning of mind-altering drugs based on our biochemical understanding of mood. In fact, this changed psychiatry 180 degrees. There was a huge flip in psychiatry in the 80s and 90s because no longer did you do talk therapy. You just prescribed these mind-altering drugs. The drawbacks, of course, to anyone taking these drugs long-term is that you're never going to get off them. And if you do, the withdrawals are so bad, I mean so bad, you can kill yourself people commit suicide getting off these drugs too quickly. Never would I advise anybody to get off these drugs without supervision. And the reason is the circuitry behind the production of these and the concentration and many other things associated with what happens across nerve cells in the brain is so complicated and so interrelated that the minute you shake the tree, you don't know what's going to fall. Of course, we reserve the right to go in and isolate serotonin, study its effects, synthesize it in a lab, so to speak, or synthesize something that affects its metabolism and decide that we've saved the world because we can get people to first base. And I'm not knocking it. I'm not knocking the SSRIs, Prozac, the whole slew of them. Not knocking it because they have an appropriate use. But they cost. And when you want to get back to the real you, and you try to withdraw, you'll find out some of those costs. By the way, there's so little understanding. There is so little research done on what really is happening at the synapse when you try to get off these drugs. There's just so little that we understand. We're at first base with all this stuff, and yet they are used with an alarming degree of increase over the last decade. And that's just the SSRIs. The opiates, GABA aminobutyric acid, it's one of the prereqs to the opiates. GABA is produced in the intestines. That's why the brain is in your gut. When you don't have sufficient amounts of GABA and you have overproduction of its antagonist neurotransmitter glutamate, you also go into horrendous mental states. Which is why, in fact, if you've got an opiate issue, meaning if you need opiates and you're prescribed opiates, one of the places to look at is the digestive tube. Because if the digestive tube is off, if the flora is off, well, then you don't produce the amount of GABA you need. And most of all, it hints to you that your nervous system is imbalanced and it's interfering with opiate production, which is what we're going to get to in a moment. But whether you're talking about serotonin, whether you're talking about oxytocin, which is the one that has to do with the feeling that your relationships bring you satiety. When you fall in love, when you make a friend, when you increase the bond between mother and child, and you get that wonderful feeling, the way your brain interprets it is off the back end of a neurotransmitter called oxytocin. Now, we haven't invented anything to mess with that one. But as soon as we do, what's going to come to market are all the reasons you want to get on an oxytocin mimetic sort of a drug. And this is the way it works. And I'm not here today to knock pharmaco. I'm really not. There are real needs for all of these things. When someone has Parkinson's, the cells inside their midbrain, the substantia nigra of the midbrain, don't produce dopamine. That section of the midbrain disappears. And dopamine is necessary for you to have agile, coordinated, smooth movements when you're moving. When you have Parkinson's, that reduces to shaky tremors. There's a problem with dopamine production. And the dopamine production can be altered by dopaminergic drugs. So we make drugs, and fortunately we make drugs in this case. But dopamine's also associated to other sorts of emotions in the body. Endorphins are legion. The endorphin is really most technically related to what depresses your sensation of pain. Now, that's a very broad gamut statement. And Candace Pert in Molecules of Emotion, I think, did one of the great jobs about giving us the depth of significance of the production of the endorphin. The endorphin blocking pain, it's not really stated correctly. The purpose of the endorphin in the production of them, and again, we're going to get to in a moment that the production of all of these is subject to things that you can control yourself. And this is the point. It's one thing to be diagnosed with not enough endorphin response, not enough serotonin, and to have to take a drug which has side effects of sorts. I cited some, but you have to understand how much control you have over the production of these. And of course, that's our perspective, right? I hope that that's your perspective. No matter how bad you feel, there are things that you can do. But as always, I'm going to ask you to go beyond the herb. I'm not going to have you go out and do the 5-HTP to produce serotonin. Or go out and buy your GABA supplements because you're trying to get off opiates and you've got an opiate deficit. Not that that's a bad thing, but that's not where I'm going to come from. The natural mechanisms you want to develop are part of a practice of health. If you're suffering or have suffered from any of these imbalances and you want a way out and you want to get off the drugs and you're being given IV drips of amino acids and you're buying all sorts of herbs that are supposed to affect the head, before the show is over today, you're going to have at least a glimpse into some of the more fundamental exercises, some of the more fundamental roads that you have to wander. So we've got our serotonin, our oxytocin, our endorphins, and our dopamine. Now, well, just to set the record straight, if you're thinking oxytocin, you're thinking about the good feeling that comes from building social alliance. If you're talking about serotonin, think of yourself after a good meal in the evening where you just feel happy. If you're thinking about endorphin, think about that long run you did one day or that workout that hurt and then you got over the hump and then you just felt like God. That's your endorphin. Dopamine has to do with the feeling of elation when you're trying to get something like the championship belt or a raise at the office or you're trying to sell a screenplay and you succeed. And each of these moments I've just described, if you go into the blood, what you experience emotionally is based on the secretion and binding of those neurotransmitters. Now, under the control, what controls and influences these productions is very variable, but very important for you to understand because that's where you're going to take action. The first one is in the gut. Yes, in the gut. On the cutting edge, and you will see more and more science about this immediately this is happening, and over the years, you will see more and more science of the good bacteria in your intestines. It means this. Last week, my rant on Columbine in South Florida. Disgusting, horrid event. Once you've ID'd somebody with deep-seated emotional stuff, go to the gut. Wasn't this kid adopted? Wasn't he adopted? Was he breastfed? Odd, isn't it? But there's a question. If you're not breastfed, you don't get your bifidus. Bifidus is an incredibly important bacteria, a probiote given through the breastfeeding. Without it, you're at a deficit. This is the way we have to be thinking. Chronic depression, go to the gut, build the gut, understand the totality. And that doesn't mean dropping a probiotic. It means, well, check any of my shows on the intestines. It's really the gut ecology, the overall ecosystem of the gut, that has an enormous influence on your emotional well-being and your emotional balance. I kid you not, over the next decade, you will see more and more and more and more data on rebuilding the flora of the gut. And I'm not talking in the simplistic ways we understand it now. So one thing you're going to do is you're going to go to the gut. Now, cortisol. Your cortisol from stress. Did you suspect I would go there? Of course you did. We're talking about neurotransmitters that affect your emotions. The influence on the dopamine, on the serotonin, on the oxytocin, so on and so forth. The influence of those neurotransmitters on the back end of either too large, too high a production of cortisol or not enough cortisol those relationships have all been well studied. Your cortisol goes up from stress, your serotonin goes down. There. Your cortisol goes up, you go numb to the stress. Well, that's good, isn't it? If the walls start to shake and the big one's coming and the ceilings are falling down, you want that cortisol to go up because you don't want to be sitting there languishing in your emotional or physical agony. You want to be on the go. You're in survival mode. Cortisol has a reason, but if cortisol doesn't shut off, you become numb. Cortisol will decrease your sensitivity to pain. And that's not good. That's not good because it's going to further draw upon the other neurotransmitters like serotonin. Cortisol is going to increase your blood sugar, which means it's going to increase your insulin. Anytime your insulin's going up, the rest of your neurotransmitters are going bonkers. They're going upside down and inside out. High insulin, again, is going to lower the serotonin even more. Now, GABA, well, if the cortisol's high, what happens to the opiate receptors in the intestines is not what you want. If the cortisol goes high when you eat a meal, right? Have you ever eaten a meal under stress? Do you enjoy the meal? Think about it. You're eating a meal under stress. It's a meal you enjoy. It's a meal you would ordinarily finish and sit there in satiety, raising your serotonin levels. And instead of that occurring, you want to throw up, which really isn't about the opiate experience. Why? Because if the cortisol goes up, the GABA receptors in the gut don't work. And if they don't work in the gut, they can't bind to the brain, and you don't get the high off the food. In fact, you get the opposite. There's no end to the effect of cortisol on the happy drugs. Stress kills happiness. There it is. Now, you didn't need to listen to this show to know that. But then again, how many people are simply prescribed serotonin, meaning the Prozac et al., the SSRI inhibitors? How many people are given opiates? How many Americans do we have swallowing these pills, blocking the feedback loops, making it nearly impossible to withdraw from when you're past that acute phase? And yet so much you can do for yourself. The ventricles of the brain. Inside your brain, you have little balloons called ventricles. They pump like ventricles of the heart. The ventricles of the heart pump blood. These ventricles pump cerebrospinal fluid. That pumping of the cerebrospinal fluid occurs in varying degrees, depending on the respiratory rate of your brain. So we say, in my medicine, we say the brain breathes. Does it breathe shallow or does it breathe deep? Meaning, do you move the cerebrospinal fluid with integrity or do you move it just at a trickle? Well, here's the side effect of moving it just at a trickle. When you move it just at a trickle, the autonomic nervous system cannot function correctly with the hormonal system. And if the hormonal system isn't balanced because the respiratory rate of the brain isn't being balanced, isn't being influenced correctly, well, then the hookup between the glands, between your cortisol, between your estrogen, between your testosterone, between your progesterone, the hookup between your hormones that are related to your respiratory rate through the nervous system, through the respiratory effect of the brain, can influence your happy chemicals. The neurotransmitters are in sync with the glandular system, and the glandular system is in sync with the autonomic nerves, and the autonomic nerves are in sync with what the frequency of respiration is in the ventricles of the brain. Now that leads us to an understanding then of the breath. Check out my show a few weeks ago on breath. That was show 349. Go back to that show, straighttalk.cc, not.com. Listen to that show. Don't just make this the Saturday morning thing and then forget it. Listen to that show and understand that that breath is controlling the rate at which the ventricles respire. In other words, expand and contract. And that frequency has a vast, deep influence on your neurotransmitters. Broken down, we say breath gives life. Breath aligns us with the universe. Through breath, we talk to God. And so on and so forth. We give great reverence to proper diaphragmatic breath. I just explained to you why. Breath delivers us a gate so that the brain can do its higher functions. And of course, if you're breathing in sync with the earth itself, well, then the breath draws upon the currents of the earth, the telluric currents. It balances with the Schumann waves. And the body, as it trains, becomes a conduit of light. Now, this isn't esoteric. This isn't poetic. This is really the way it works. We say the individual and its ability to feel oneness with God is a matter of aligning the physiology correctly. I'm explaining to you today that physiology. I'm explaining to you how it really works. I'm going beyond just popping an herb or some capsule or worse yet, something like Prozac. This should not be just mysterious. It shouldn't be criticized and condemned as not having more than enough double-blind placebo studies to prove it. Do you realize by the time we get there, will be long gone. But if you look in the literature, it's already there. It just doesn't get to you. And that's why I do this show, to get to you. I sit here each week and watch. Our ignorance, our naivete, our innocence render us seemingly helpless to all sorts of things that make us insomniacs at night, that scare us in our sleep. And it isn't necessary. If you're new to the show, I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. This is Straight Talk on Health. Every Saturday morning, 10 to 10:30 on 740 AM. Where does this all lead? It leads to two other interesting places. It leads to the word DMT, dimethyltryptamine. If you're on the website, that's picture number 20. DMT, the spirit molecule. The third eye, there's something about the pineal gland. Oh, yes, that pineal gland, going as far back as recorded history, have we had this fixation about something deep, right at the forehead, deep between the eyebrows. The third eye, some of us call it. It's not esoteric jargon. It's not the occult. It's a gland. I put a great picture of that gland on picture number 15. Go to picture 15. If you can't get to a computer, get to that computer when you can. There's no better example of the mysteries found in the human brain, the sacred places that God put there for us to discover, than picture 15. Note that the pineal gland is sitting between the superior colliculuses of the brain. And what I want you to respect is that pineal gland, it wobbles as the ventricles pump. The pineal gland wobbles. The third ventricle is connected to the pineal gland. As the respiratory rate of the brain changes, as the pineal gland wobbles, does it begin to bang, so to speak, off each inner side of the colliculus? And when it hits the right frequency, that banging motion stimulates a chemical transformation of the pineal gland. We have this down cold. We have this down solid in the deep neuroscience. And what we know is it will stimulate the production and release of something that you can't find in the blood because it disappears too quickly. And that's called DMT, dimethyltryptamine. And we know. See, we have to say we suspect, but we really do know. It's that neurotransmitter or whatever it is that gives us the God experience. You want to talk about taking yourself out of the ravage of depression and anxiety? When that might exist because God put in there these secret places that with education and training and faith can pull you like the phoenix out of the depths of hell and into the God experience. And we're looking at it there on picture number 15. What does your inner sense of truth tell you when you listen to me today? Your inner sense of the truth. It's your inner sense of the truth, your senses that have to guide you, or you will remain lost. Science should embrace that. Science should not condescend towards it. Picture 15, take that home. Listen to Rick Straussman. Listen to his quote. Straussman's a psychiatrist. He wrote that book on the DMT that I feature on the site. Listen to what he says about DMT. When our individual life force enters our fetal body, the moment in which we become truly human, it passes through the pineal gland and triggers the first primordial flood of DMT. Later at birth, the pineal releases more DMT. As we die, the life force leaves the body through the pineal gland, releasing another flood of this psychedelic spirit molecule. He's telling us that in normal physiology, we have three deep experiences of the DMT molecule. When sperm meets egg and we become, at birth and at death. Around that, there's more anti-depression therapy. If you really take that into yourself. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. Hope you've enjoyed the show. Get to the website, straighttalk.cc. Review the show and all the shows that link to this. If anybody's lost in the labyrinth of health, call my office, 714-850-1007. 714-850-1007. See you next time.
Okay. That's a wrap. Don't forget to get to Dr. Medici's website at drmedici.com to look at the pictures and review the show as often as you wish. See you next week.